I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. There have been some changes in policies and procedures at the Philadelphia Police Department. Interrogations of homicide suspects are now being videotaped. The department posts information about officers involved in shootings on their website. Suspects, witnesses, and victims are being given more information about their rights, and photo lineups will be presented to witnesses and victims in a very different kind of way. We invited the Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey to join us on Radio Times to talk about efforts to reduce crime and improve policing in Philadelphia. He has been on the job here in Philadelphia for just 6 years now. And Charles Ramsey, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Well, it's good to be back. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Do you see videotaping of homicide suspects as something that's good for the department, good for the police department?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. We're a little behind the curve as it relates to that. Many departments have been videotaping interrogations for years. We did not have that capability, but we do now in homicide. Soon, all the detective divisions will also be able to videotape. Some of it was a cost issue, and others was just simply pushing forward in that particular area. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
But why was the Philadelphia Police Department behind other departments, including Washington, D.C., where you came from?
Well, and just hadn't pushed forward on the subject. And then, of course, with the recession, it became a monetary issue. But we got that resolved, and at least we have enough now to be able to do homicide. You know, there's any change is going to result in a little bit of pushback, but it's the right thing to do. It protects not only the arrestee, but also the officer that 2 years from now could be accused of coercion or something during the course of an interrogation. Obviously, a video will prove once and for all whether or not something occurred that should not have occurred. So it's just good, and I think it provides a lot more evidence for district attorneys as they bring these cases to trial. So, you know, it's something that we've got to work out the bugs. Obviously, anything new is going to maybe have one or two issues that we need to address, but we're ready to move forward.
Do you credit the ACLU, the Innocence Project of Pennsylvania? I know they worked with you on some of these issues. Do they get some credit for this?
Oh, without question. I mean, we've worked very closely with them, not only on this issue, but earlier during your introduction, you mentioned sequential lineups, you know, the double-blind sequential, where you're not using the old-fashioned lineups with all the pictures together. You're doing them one at a time, and the person who's presenting to the victim the photographs is not someone who is directly associated with the case, so there can be no inadvertent, you know, cues given that would lead to a wrong identification. The whole goal is to make sure that we have the right people in custody, that we have people who are, in fact, guilty of the crime, and then we move forward with prosecution of the individual. But we want to minimize any errors that could occur as a result of eyewitness identification.
Mm. Well, even going back to the videotaping, are you going to be training interrogators or investigators to make sure that they follow the law, they don't go over the line when it comes to some kind of investigation?
Well, we actually have a very good homicide unit and some very skilled investigators. One of the things I found when we did this in the district is that they begin to really critique themselves because they look at themselves on tape. And they can see exactly, you know, how well they're doing in terms of interrogating a suspect, the kinds of questions they're asking, all the kinds of things that take place during the course of an interrogation. We did provide some training to our investigators in terms of how to utilize the taping equipment and that sort of thing. But a lot of it, believe it or not, once you see yourself on tape and you listen to yourself, some of the things that you can improve on begin to automatically happen.
Is that shared with fellow officers or supervisors so that there's some kind of analysis about how someone is performing?
Well, yeah. But, I mean, when you're talking about homicide, you just don't get into homicide. You're more veteran detectives wind up in homicide. So you're not putting someone that has no prior investigative experience in a unit like that. They are pretty much handpicked individuals. So, you know, they tend to be very solid to begin with. But everybody can always improve a bit, you know, some better than others and so forth. But it's really done for the purpose of making sure that we have a clear record of what took place so that everyone is protected, the officer, the defendant, everyone.
Also in Philadelphia, suspects who are not charged, according to my reading in preparation for the show, not charged, will not be held more than 36 hours. Did I read that correctly?
Well, yes, you did read it correctly. And what we're doing is that, again, working with ACLU and others, you know, people that aren't charged, you know, what's a reasonable length of time? And we have checks and balances within that. After a certain period, there are checkpoints along the way where a supervisor has to monitor, has to make sure that, you know, this is something where the person should still remain in our custody as a suspect or what have you. You know, witnesses that are there voluntarily if they wish to leave, that sort of thing, so that we don't, you know, go beyond what is reasonable in terms of trying to solve crimes. Now, you know, we still need people to cooperate. We still need to be able to talk to people. We still need to be able to bring people in that may have witnessed something and so forth. But then it's a question of just how long can you reasonably hold on to them without charging. And so that's why that is laid out clearly in a directive.
Are you worried, though, that, let's say, witnesses or even victims who might be worried, nervous about whatever they're going to say, that they will, in a sense, take advantage of this offer and not come down and talk?
Well, you know, if we think someone is involved in a crime, we will bring them down to talk to them.
That would be suspect.
So, and well, the suspect, and at the time, you don't know who's a suspect and who's a witness or what have you. So it depends on the situation and the circumstance. But it remains to be seen. We'll take a look at this and see whether or not it's causing us some unnecessary issues. But at the time something occurs, you don't know. You start off with someone who is a witness and you wind up being a suspect or vice versa. So you don't really know what you have. But the bottom line is, as soon as you can determine who's who, then certainly we want to make sure that we don't unnecessarily detain people. But we still need people to come forward and provide information so we can get people off the street that are causing harm out there in the community.
Are they free to go? I mean, do they have to come down to police headquarters to be talked to?
Do they have to?
Yes.
No, they don't, but we certainly encourage them to. If we know in fact that they're just a witness or have some information, maybe they want to just talk to us privately somewhere at the scene. That happens quite a bit, too. Not everybody wants to necessarily go downtown, and that's okay, but we can talk to them and get information from them. And then you have some people that just don't want to cooperate, and that I don't think the directive is going to impact that so much. You've got folks that want to cooperate, and you've got folks that don't want to cooperate, but not everyone necessarily has to come downtown, but we certainly want people to provide information. Now, if it's cloudy and you don't know if they're actually physically involved in it or not, then obviously we're going to bring them down until we can determine exactly what role, if any, they played in this.
What was the homicide rate in Philadelphia last year in 2013?
Well, last year we had a significant decline, about 25% over the year before, 37% since 07, the year before the mayor and I came in. It's the lowest rate since 1967. So we made some tremendous progress. The stat that really I think is most telling is the number of shootings being down significantly. And so we've only been keeping records of shootings as a separate category for a few years. I think 2000 is as far back as we can go where we separate them out from other aggravated assaults. But it's the lowest number since we've been keeping those records since 2000. You know, we'll just continue to push down. I mean, 247 homicides, but if your family member is one of the 247, it's not enough. So we have to just keep trying to get the numbers down as low as we possibly can.
Well, we know, and I've talked to you in the past about the fact that in many ways Philadelphia has a flood of illegal weapons in this city. Are you making progress in getting those weapons off the street, or do you think there's something sort of preempting what could be a shootout between two people?
Well, one of the things that we've really focused on are our hot spots. We also are very aggressive when it comes to potential retaliation. If you've got gangs or other groups involved in a shooting or a slaying, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out that it'll probably be retaliation. The question is who might be the person to retaliate and have some extra presence there to make sure that we can at least try to avoid having the retaliatory shooting take place. One of the things we did at the beginning of the year, two of my deputies came up with an idea to identify areas in every district in the city, 35 in total, Some were violent crime, but some were property crime, burglary, robbery, theft from auto, and so forth. And the goal was to identify those areas and then develop strategies to effectively deal with a particular crime problem within that. And it's been very successful. So it's getting all the captains on board, understanding the crime, the trends that take place within their respective commands, and making sure that they're addressing those trends and those patterns.
The trick is, of course, sustaining whatever kind of program or focus
right.
That seems to be working.
Well, yeah, I mean, it has to be sustainable. And one of the things that we did from the very beginning was we didn't do anything so extraordinary that you couldn't sustain it. I mean, if I took 200 extra cops and put in a particular district, sure, we tamp things down, but could I leave 200 extra people there? The answer to that is probably no.
Right.
In fact, not probably no, it is no. So whatever we do it within the resources that we have. And it's just trying to get everybody on the same page, all the patrol units, the specialized units, everybody understanding the nature of the crime taking place and the strategies that we need to implement in order to have an impact on those particular crimes. Doing that, you can sustain, and that's the whole goal.
You told me before going on the air that a third of people released from, is it from jail?
Right. Yeah, one of the things, we're always kind of analyzing our numbers, and just in 2013, for an example, 35% of the people that we arrested for murder have been released from jail within the last 2 years. 34% of the people that were victims of homicide have been released from jail within the last 2 years. So about a third of both on the offender side and the victim side were released from jail within the last couple of years. And so an interesting stat, one that we really do follow, but the rate of recidivism and people getting engaged and either committing crime or engaging in high-risk behavior that will make you more susceptible to being a homicide or shooting victim.
We're almost up in a break here, but does it tell you that there's something about our incarceration system that isn't working if you've got that high level of either victimhood or perpetration?
Well, there are things that work and there are things that don't work. And obviously we've got to constantly work toward lowering the amount of recidivism, getting people to actually, you know, get engaged legally in ways in which to make money. There is an underground economy, basically drugs, that exists in many of our communities that also put people at higher risk of becoming a victim or perhaps even offending. So we've got to find a way in which both in terms of education, job skills, and things of that nature, where we can get people to be able to earn a legitimate living. And if they do that, then they're less likely to become a victim and less likely to become an offender. And I don't think we're at a point where we need to be in terms of the numbers of people that we need to get involved in those kinds of activities.
And that's Charles Ramsey, Police Commissioner of the Philadelphia Police Department. He's also head of the Major City Chiefs Association, including 69 of the largest cities here in the United States, Canada, and the UK. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Fringe Arts supports WHYY, presenting The Room Nobody Knows, a surreal and delightfully weird performance from the mind of Japanese psychiatrist turned director Kuro Tanino. The alter egos of two brothers take the forms of a pig and a sheep and play out their unconscious thoughts and psychological desires on a dreamlike set, replete with pig faces, phalluses, and hidden compartments on the Fringe Arts stage, January 30th through February 1st. Tickets at fringearts.com.
Tomorrow night, an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's State of the Union address. I'm Robert Siegel. Join me for in-depth analysis and reaction from members of Congress. You'll also hear the Republicans' response to the president's speech. An NPR News special, President Obama's State of the Union address.
Tomorrow night at 9 on WHYY-TV, online at WHYY.org, and right here on WHYY-FM.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, 50 years after President Johnson declared the war on poverty, how are things going in the poorest state in the nation?
76% of Mississippi's poor children live with a single mom. And those are moms who are working.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. If you're just joining us, Charles Ramsey is our guest. He was appointed police commissioner of the Philadelphia Police Department on January 7th, 2008, 6 years ago. And he joins us on Radio Times talking about efforts by the department to both reduce crime and improve policing in the city. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Again, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Commissioner, I know there was a police shooting over the weekend and then a police officer shot a suspect on the street. And I also know there has been an investigation into the use of deadly force. What do we know today?
Well, the particular shooting that you're referring to that occurred last night is a suspect in a homicide that occurred the day before, actually. That individual, as of this morning, was still recovering from his wounds. No police were injured. It was a situation where I don't have all the details, but the individual was armed. It's unclear whether he actually took a shot at police, pointed the gun at police, or what have you. But in any event, he is a suspect in a homicide that occurred Saturday on 2900 block of Ridge Street. And he'll probably be charged with that particular homicide once he recovers from his injuries. 2012, we did have a spike in police-related shootings.
52 of them, as I understand.
Yeah, and then last year we did have a decline. But I was in the process of reading a report that the COPS office, which COPS stands for Community-Oriented Policing Services, it's part of the Department of Justice. They had done a study in Las Vegas. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police, a very good friend of mine, Sheriff Doug Gillespie, there asked for some assistance to take a look at the shootings they had in Las Vegas and focusing on policy, on training, and on the follow-up investigation that's done whenever a police officer discharges their firearm. We were in the process of looking at that and already taking a look at our current training and policies to see whether or not we had gaps, and we did have some gaps. And so I asked the Justice Department if they would come into Philadelphia and do the same thing, and they're in the process of doing that now. One of the things that really struck me that I really liked about the Las Vegas report was the amount of what's called reality-based training. In other words, putting officers in scenarios where they have to make decisions on what level of force to use in a given situation. We have regular firearms training, and we have some reality-based training, but not as much as was recommended in the Las Vegas report. Mm-hmm. Also, some of the language within our use of force policy we've adopted from Vegas and so forth. So I'm very interested in what the recommendations will be, and we will follow them, obviously. But again, you know, it's not so much the number of shootings, it's whether or not the officer has exhausted all other means and whether they're tactically what they did was sound, so they didn't put themselves in a position where they had to shoot, but if they used different tactics, perhaps they could have avoided it. Those kinds of things. It keeps our officers safe and it keeps the public safe.
Are there individual police officers who are being looked at? Perhaps they have a higher rate of these deadly shootings?
No, not specific officers, but we have certain areas of our city where we have a higher rate of gun violence. In fact, one of the things that I've done is put on our website, phillypolice.org, we do have a map of shootings throughout the city, and we have a layer on top of that of where the police shootings have taken place, and one matches the other. I mean, where we find the most violent offenders and people committing gun crime, that's our officers are being sent on purpose in those areas to deal with those people, and sometimes issues like that come up. But even knowing that, we want to make sure that it's always a last resort. Nothing is more sacred than human life, and we want to make sure that we're doing everything possible to provide the equipment that our officers need, the training that they need, but I can't say that there will not be instances where shootings won't take place because we got some pretty bad characters that we have to deal with.
And let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. We have Mike from, looks like Olney, joining us on Radio Times. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Sure.
And I look forward to hearing from Commissioner Ramsey. Commissioner, a couple of years ago, you sent one of your officers to a three-month Peace and Conflict Resolution Certification Program that is run by or sponsored by Rotary. And I'm wondering why you made that decision and what impact you've seen from it.
Fair enough, Mike. Thanks for the call.
Well, the lieutenant that was sent there, one, it was a tremendous opportunity for them to go and to learn on a global scale, literally a global scale, some of the issues as it relates to, you know, policing, peace within not only communities but in nations. And it was a great opportunity. We actually have a lieutenant now, so we're sending our second lieutenant over for the same course of instruction. The feedback I got from the lieutenant that went over was that it was well worth our while to make that investment. It is 3 months long. It is overseas. But the more we can expose our officers to issues that are taking place not only in the United States but other countries, I think the better off we're going to be as an organization. On a separate note, if I may, I earlier mentioned with the shootings, phillypolice.org. It's actually phillypolice.com. Phillypolice.com is the actual website that not only provides the maps but also summaries of officer-involved shootings.
Mike, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Commissioner, I'd like to get an update on the federal investigation into the behavior of some members of the narcotics unit. There has been an investigation, I guess an ongoing investigation,
yeah,
something like 5 years in the making, or certainly the story came to light in the Philadelphia Daily News about 5 years ago. What is the status of that investigation?
Well, still an investigation. We still are working. Our Internal Affairs Division has been working hand in glove with federal authorities. I can't say a lot about it because it is ongoing. But obviously, one of the things that I've really focused on since I've been here is not only crime fighting, but also dealing with some of the internal issues. I mean, you know, the vast majority of our officers do the job very well every single day. They're honest. They're hardworking. They don't abuse people's rights. They don't engage in corrupt activities and so forth. But unfortunately, there is a small percentage mm-hmm. that do, and we're going to root them out. They don't deserve to be police officers. They don't deserve to be to stand shoulder to shoulder with the hardworking, honest cops that are out there every single day. And we will do whatever it takes in order to root them out.
I'm looking at something in the Philadelphia Inquirer, I guess last week, January 19th. Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey confirmed on Friday that a federal grand jury has been impaneled to probe allegations against former members of Philadelphia's narcotics unit. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, you know, again, proceedings in a grand jury are secret, so I can't go any further than that. But suffice it to say that there is an investigation that's taking place. We'll let the cards fall where they may. Everyone is entitled to due process. But if you're out there doing wrong, you will be caught and you will be prosecuted.
And that's Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey joining us in this portion of Radio Times. We have civil rights attorney David Rudofsky. He'll be joining us in about 10 minutes. And we've been talking about some of the efforts here in the city to improve policing, also to reduce crime. And if you want to give us a call, again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us a tweet at Marty Moscowane or send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Let me get, looks like Rocco from Delaware County. Rocco, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. It's nice to speak to you, Commissioner.
Yeah, thank you.
My question is for you, Commissioner. If in the state of Pennsylvania, citizens who are allowed to possess firearms, they're allowed to open carry. And in the city of Philadelphia, the city is considered the city of the first class.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't allow those individuals to open carry in the city of Philadelphia. And my question is, if that would be allowed, do you think that would reduce the criminals' activity, since that's essentially what the police do, walk around with guns open carried to deter criminals? If normal citizens who are allowed to possess firearms were allowed to exercise that state right in the city, do you think that would reduce criminal activity? And if not, why would you think that way?
Rocco, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Well, thanks for the call, and it's really a good question. There has been some confusion around this issue, even amongst our own officers, where we had a couple incidents a couple years ago with someone open carrying, and the gun was taken from them and so forth. And our understanding now is that, you know, as long as they have the license to carry, that open carry is permissible. Now, the other part of the question is whether or not I think that would affect criminal activity. The concerns I have is that other people don't know who you are. Nobody, I mean, you know you're a decent law-abiding person, but does another person? We live in a world now where just this past weekend in Columbia, Maryland, you had some guy walk into a mall and start shooting. Aurora, Colorado, where we had the movie theater shooting, and Newtown. I mean, we've had all these different incidents, and on college campuses. I mean, last week we must have had three separate incidents on college campuses where we had people shooting. You know, what kind of effect does it have when you walk in plain clothes and officers open carry, but we have uniforms or you know, if they're in plain clothes, it should be concealed. But, you know, you walk in there, people don't know who you are. What kind of panic does that send? A police officer stops you on the street. I mean, what does that do to the officer who is heightened in terms of their awareness of a potential individual with a gun? You don't know what your particular – or they don't know what your motive may be. It just puts a lot of people in a very potentially dangerous situation. If you have a situation like in a movie theater that occurred last week in Florida, I believe it was Florida, where the individual was texting and one guy shot another. What if you had three other people in the movie theater all armed? Now you got an exchange of gunfire where nobody knows who the other person is. And now you got a larger shootout in a situation. There are a lot of things that need to be dealt with when we start talking about people being allowed to carry guns. For an example, I believe strongly at least go through class and understand what the law is in that given jurisdiction. When is it appropriate to use deadly force? Not just make out an application and I give you and say, okay, it's okay to carry. We go through hundreds of hours of training in the use of force in policing and don't always get it right. And yet we give citizens guns and we give them no training. We give them nothing in terms of the law, nothing in terms that they know how to safely operate a firearm. You know, I think this whole gun debate has been wrong from the start when we started talking about gun control. Americans don't like the word control. It's responsible gun ownership is the issue. And what do we need to do to make sure that guns stay in the hands of responsible people and we take whatever appropriate steps we need to take to not only keep that person safe, but keep others around them safe?
Well, and what I hear in Rocco's question, and I've heard from others, which is an armed citizenry is a polite citizenry. The idea is if you arm everyone, then people are going to behave.
Well, I mean, I don't sign off on that. It's just not that simple. It's really not that simple. And if I see you with a gun, if I'm going to rob you, I'm going to shoot you first, then rob you. So, I mean, listen, there's pros and cons to everything. And, you know, I just think that people need to take a deep breath and come up with something sensible. Right now on the debate, we got extremes on both sides. And at some point in time, we got to come down to something reasonable. I'm not a person that believes banning all guns in the United States is the right solution. But I think there needs to be reasonable efforts made and reasonable controls in place in order to make sure that guns stay in the hands of responsible people. And if you get rid of your gun and sell it, you sell it to another responsible person. And there needs to be some limitations there.
Let me ask you about, you mentioned drugs earlier, and I wonder for Philadelphia, maybe for other major cities as well, how much illegal drugs drives the crime rate?
Well, quite a bit, but part of it is trying to capture the actual numbers, a bit on the elusive side. And I say that because if a person commits a theft from auto and we arrest them for theft from auto, we don't really take the time to really document whether or not the reason they broke into the car is to support a drug habit. Now, in many cases, that is the case. But to come up with the right statistic is difficult. There are used to call DAWN. I forget what it stands for now, but there were random urinalysis done of people coming into custody, and there was a pretty high percentage, 70-75% of people coming into police custody for various crimes had some kind of drug in their system. Mm-hmm. So does it drive a lot of the crime? Yes. Does it increase the likelihood of victimization? If you're in the business of selling drugs or using them, you're going to be engaging in some high-risk behavior. So the answer is yes, but to what extent? that, I can't give you a real definitive answer.
There was an editorial, actually, in the Inquirer about D.A. Seth Turney. Seth Williams, instituting a progressive, pragmatic policy allowing those charged with the possession of small amounts of marijuana to avoid criminal prosecution. They would pay a fine and take a class. Jim Kinney last week actually introduced a similar bill in city council. And yet, according to this editorial, the Philadelphia Daily News reporting last year, the police have continued to arrest more than 3,000 Philadelphians on minor marijuana possession charges. Should your department rethink that?
Well, I mean, the reason for the legislation is to allow us to write a citation for minor possession. We don't have the option now.
Because that's really a law, you're saying?
It's really not fair for us to be criticized in that regard. If we can keep people on the street, fine. Now, having said that, I'm not a proponent of legalization. And I know there are a lot of people that are. And I also question the need to, even with medical marijuana, if the THC is the ingredient that you need, I don't know why that can't be in pill form or something. I don't know why you got to smoke a joint in order to get it, in other words. If secondary smoke of a cigarette is problematic, what about marijuana smoke? Some guidelines around the growing of this product. So one person grows and you have a higher concentration versus another person that grows, it's weaker. There's no FDA oversight. There are a lot of issues that have to be worked out before I would even begin to think about whether or not this is something that ought to be legal or not. We just seem to be going from one extreme to the other. But I am in favor of being able to write a citation for minor possession as opposed to actually having a physical arrest taking officers off the street for inordinate amounts of time to process.
So you're waiting for city council to pass this and then you can...
Yeah, I haven't seen the language of the bill yet.
Okay.
So once I see the language, then I can take a stronger position. But I certainly understand where the councilman's coming from on that.
Does the department need an integrity officer?
Well, I don't know. I mean, listen, we're working as hard as we can here. Now, you know, whether or not it's going to do anything to make a difference, I don't know what an integrity officer could do that I'm not already doing. But, you know, listen, if that's
I guess it's an outside person or outside perspective.
Yeah, it is an outside perspective. But, you know, I'm not exactly from here either. And, I mean, what else can they do other than what I've already been doing? But if that's what the city decides to do, God bless them. We'll find some space for them somewhere in the roundhouse and go at it. But we're doing everything we can right now in order to make sure that this department maintains the highest level of integrity among the rank and file and leadership of the department. So, you know, if we're going to do something, you need to do something that's going to have some concrete results, not just window dressing to make people feel good. And it doesn't really translate into anything at all. But we have to all be serious and deeply concerned about the way in which this department is viewed. One officer acting outside the law tarnishes the entire organization.
We have 30 seconds. What's a goal for 2014 for you?
Continue to drive the crime down. Continue to go after officers that are corrupt and just make this a better and a stronger department. Build stronger relationships with communities, especially the more challenged communities that we serve. And that's an ongoing goal that we'll continue to try to push forward.
Well, Commissioner Ramsey, as always, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times. Coming across the street here, joining us in studio.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. He's a police commissioner of the Philadelphia Police Department, a job he got 6 years ago, January 2008. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll be talking with civil rights attorney David Rudofsky and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Legendary pianist Radu Lupu joins Yannick Nézet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra for Bartok's Third Piano Concerto. Yannick Nézet-Séguin also conducts Dvorak's Sixth Symphony and Smetana's The Moldau. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or at philorg.org. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, Radu Lupu in concert with Yannick Nézet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
On the next Fresh Air, the troubling alliance between the Catholic Church and Italian dictator Benito Mussolini. Historian David Kurtzer says while many believe the Church heroically opposed fascism, newly released material documents the critical support and moral authority the Church lent the regime in the 20s and 30s. His book is called The Pope and Mussolini. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again at 7 on WHYY.
Well-known neuropsychiatrist and author Dan Siegel has written Brainstorm, Understanding the Teenage Brain. Now, I can hear every parent out there smirking. Good luck with that. Nevertheless, best-selling author of Mindsight has written a very readable book helping us all understand what does and doesn't happen in those brains. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, Dr. Dan Siegel. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I just said goodbye to Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey. He was giving us an update on efforts in the city to improve policing and reduce crime. Joining us now is David Rudofsky. He's a civil rights and criminal defense attorney on the faculty at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. He practices public interest law at the firm of Carey's Rudofsky, Messing and Feinberg. And David Rudofsky, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here.
I was talking with the commissioner about some of these new policies, including videotaping interrogations, having the department post information about officers involved in shootings on the website, different ways of doing photo lineups. Are you pleased with some of the changes at the department?
I am. The department's taken some very important initiatives over the past year. The ones you just mentioned, I would focus on two of them, particularly the videotaping of all interrogations and the new methods for use in identification processes. Those are very, very important in terms of the integrity of the criminal justice system. And I want to say preliminarily that Commissioner Ramsey did a good job in initiating that and also, in a sense, reaching across the aisle on both those issues. He's worked closely with Marissa Bluestein from the Innocence Project of Pennsylvania to come up with the best methods for assuring that that kind of evidence, which is often used in criminal cases, whether it be confessions or identifications, which are used in so many cases, really come in a reliable form. What we've learned over the years from the DNA revolution is that many of the wrongful convictions that we've seen in this country have resulted either from false confessions. About 25% of those cases involve false confessions, that is, innocent people supposedly confessing to the crime, and 70% involve misidentification. And the initiatives that Commissioner Ramsey has started to videotape interrogations so we know exactly what goes on during that interrogation and we can see it rather than just having some testimony between the detective and the defendant later, that's very important. And the new methods for identification, the double blind, to have situations where we don't even have subconscious suggestions to the witness, where we have a method of sequential showing that's much more effective in assuring that we get a good identification. Those are very important to the integrity of the system.
Well, you've been handling cases involving a police and governmental misconduct for decades now. Do you see this as a new day in Philadelphia? Can we go that far?
Well, we're hoping for that. Obviously, we're just starting. Right now, these procedures are on paper only. We're going to have to see how they are in operation. We're hopeful that the department will buy into that. That is, the detectives and others who have to enforce these rules will actually do it with integrity. So a lot of this will take some measurement later to see if they actually do it right. But both steps are important. Other jurisdictions have already taken these steps and have found them to be workable and reliable. Many police departments around the country are moving in this direction. And so we're hopeful on at least those two issues that we will see better law enforcement and more integrity in the prosecution of criminal cases because of those changes. But again, until we actually see them in operation and can evaluate it, it's a little too early to say that we've come into a new age.
Well, Commissioner Ramsey admitted that Philadelphia has been behind other cities in embracing some of these new procedures and policies. Do you feel the same way, and do you think that tells us something about the police department in Philadelphia?
Well, I think we have been behind the times. I think that's certainly true over the years on a number of issues. Those are two of them that you can cite to. Questions about use of force, where the commissioner's taken some other initiatives, is another area where I think we don't do as well as other departments. So I think the answer is yes, we have been behind the times. Other departments have done it better. And the good news is that Commissioner Ramsey has thought about these issues and has decided to move on them, even though there's been some resistance both within the department and from other sources.
We talked also with the commissioner about the use of deadly force being invested. He asked the Justice Department to take a look at it. It looks like the use of deadly force was down in 2013. And again, how do you, I guess, understand how we should understand about the use of deadly force under obviously very adverse situations?
Yeah. You can't, the commissioner's right, you can't always tell by the numbers. The numbers did spike in 2012, they were down in 2013, even though the crime rates didn't change very much between those 2 years. I think the important question on use of force is whenever a police officer uses deadly force, whether the person is killed or not, when they actually shoot somebody, the real question there is the integrity of the police department investigation. That's what's got to be done right. I mean, obviously, we want the officers to be trained properly. Commissioner Ramsey talks about reality-based training. That should have happened 30 years ago. Many departments do that. It's not just how well you can fire a firearm, but in what circumstances you actually use deadly force. I mean, that's what the training has to focus on. So you need both the good training, and then after the fact, you need a reliable, unbiased investigation. Internal Affairs investigates every shooting in Philadelphia, but over the years, myself, my colleagues in this community have read hundreds of these investigations. Sometimes they're done well, and sometimes they're not. And I think the message that has to go out is that if you shoot and you're right, we will back you up. If you shoot and you were wrong, then there'll be some consequences, because we're dealing with human life. And there have been too many situations in Philadelphia where officers have used deadly force where the circumstances did not justify that use of force.
Do you think having an integrity officer or some outside observer, do you think that would be a good reform for the department?
I think it's important to have civilian oversight. So I do think an integrity officer who's got that standing is helpful. On the other hand, for all of these changes, as much as you can get outside recommendations, whether it's from people like me, lawyers who are looking at the situation, or an integrity officer, the real change has to come internally. The department has to, what we like to say, buy in to these kinds of changes. The same way that Commissioner Ramsey is trying to get the detectives to buy into this new methods of interrogation with videotaping, new methods of identification to make sure that any identification is highly reliable. The department and the officers there really have to buy into that. So while it's important, I think, to have outside oversight, to make recommendations, to check on how well things are going, ultimately, it's accountability within the department. And I think that's been a sore issue in Philadelphia for many years. It's not that the policies haven't been necessarily okay. Sometimes they're not up to date, but even with policies that are, it's the effectuation of those policies and fair accountability when officers cross the line. And I think that's what's been missing over many years. I think the commissioner is trying to change that. But you don't get major shifts in policing, which we need in Philadelphia, which I think the commissioner realizes, unless there is that internal accountability.
And that's David Rudofsky. He's a civil rights and criminal defense attorney. He's on the faculty at the University of Pennsylvania Law School, practices public interest law with the Philadelphia law firm of Carey's, Rudofsky, Messing, and Feinberg. And we asked him to join us to give his perspective on some of the policing reforms in Philadelphia. We began our conversation with the Commissioner, Charles Ramsey. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Coane. David, I'm curious about when there are these videotapes of police interrogations of homicide suspects. Is that admissible in court?
Certainly, and in fact, it's an interesting point that when this idea was first surfaced 10 or 15 years ago that there ought to be videotaping of all interrogations, certainly in homicide cases, but I think in any serious crime, many police and police departments resisted that. They thought that juries or judges might be offended by some of the tactics detectives use. It turns out in virtually every place, every jurisdiction in which this process has been put into place, the police like it a lot. It is admissible in court, and they like it because if they do the interrogation right, that's clear proof that the interrogation was done without coercion, that any confession was freely given, and that it was fairly done. It's the best evidence. And so on both sides, it helps. In fact, in some places, there have been fewer motions made to reject the confession, to suppress the confession, because everybody knows what's on that videotape. So it is admissible. It is what we like to call the best evidence. And there's no reason in this modern age why every interrogation in every serious case should not be done from start to finish.
I frankly didn't have a chance to talk to the commissioner about stop and frisk in Philadelphia, but David, I'm curious about your perspective on that policy.
Yeah, so I think that's a good example of what I said before about accountability. A couple of years ago, we did file a suit regarding stop and frisk practices in Philadelphia. We had very high numbers of people who were being stopped without any reason whatsoever. There was also some significant evidence, we thought, of racial bias in the patterns of the stop. The police department and the city agreed. We reached a consent decree. We didn't have to litigate the case. And the city agreed to put into place new training, new protocols to try to ensure that stops, and there are many, many stops in Philadelphia. The police department stops over 200,000 pedestrians a year. Wow. In Philadelphia. That's a major police tactic in fighting crime. It's a permissible tactic if it's done right. If it's not done right, there's a huge danger, not only a violation of rights, but alienating the very community that you need to fight crime. And so when you have high rates, as we continue to have, 30, 35, 40% of people stopped without reasonable suspicion, that's a problem. And that's the accountability issue. The city did the right thing. They put into place new procedures, new protocols, but as of yet, they have failed to really hold officers accountable within the department, from inspectors all the way down to patrol officers, to make sure that the stops are done right. And just on that point, you mentioned marijuana.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that, yes.
And a lot of that relates to it. We could have all kinds of debates about, whether it ought to be legalized and so on. And I think I disagree with the commissioner, I think, on marijuana. The costs of enforcement are so adverse that legalization is the right way to go. But there's another problem there. In a city that's about half minority and half white, and in which, from every study that's ever been done, people use marijuana pretty much in relation to their race. That is, whites don't use it a whole lot more than minorities or vice versa. In Philadelphia, over the past 3 years, 90% of everybody arrested for marijuana is minority.
Wow.
Now, why is that? Obviously, that doesn't reflect the use of marijuana. What it reflects is deployment of police and police tactics. And as I often said, if we had as many police in the Penn dorms as we did in North Philadelphia, you'd see a different population of people being arrested. But crimes like that, low-level crimes where you have high disparity because of race, I think that's another consideration in deciding whether that's a system we can really live with.
But what Commissioner Ramsey said was, he's waiting for city council to move. Is that the appropriate response?
Well, yeah, it's certainly city council should move. I actually think between the police department and the DA, They have some discretion as well, even without city council passing an ordinance. I think they could, in effect, make sure that this kind of policing and the huge numbers of arrests we have for this very low-level crime didn't occur.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I did ask the commissioner about this FBI investigation into members of the, I guess, former members of a narcotics unit in Philadelphia. This is an investigation apparently that has been going on for years now. And as someone who is, knows the law, knows how the system is supposed to work, why does it take so long?
That's a very good question.
I mean, I don't know if you know the details of this one, but just broadly speaking, it always feels like it takes such a long time. And time, I think, also can contaminate whatever evidence you might have.
It's just unclear to me. You're right. It's been 5 years on this particular investigation into a number of narcotics officers where there were accusations of corruption in their narcotics enforcement activities. I don't know whether those allegations are true or not, but you would think in 5 years with grand juries, the FBI, internal affairs, we would at least have an answer from the officials. And the fact that we don't is very troubling. And I would just point out that narcotics enforcement is that one area that's so susceptible to corruption. And we've had scandal after scandal in Philadelphia. It seems like every 3 or 4 or 5 years, there are another allegation of officers or narcotic squads that have gone bad, and we understand the reason. The temptations are great, the money, the drugs. It's often hard to supervise the police in that kind of work. Most do a good job, but there is something about narcotics enforcement that can lead to that. And that when you have investigations hanging for so long, it's not fair to anybody. It's not fair to the officers, and it's not fair to the public if, in fact, there was corruption going on.
Well, on that note, David Rudofsky, as always, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Good to be here.
And he's civil rights, a criminal defense attorney on the faculty at Penn, practicing public interest law at the firm of Carey's Rudofsky, Messing and Feinberg, which is located here in Philadelphia. And again, we began our conversation with Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey talking about some of the new policies and procedures instituted in his department. And we'd love to hear from you about what you think about our conversation. Go to our homepage, go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can carry on that conversation there. And of course, learn much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.